having been told you should be dead makes you look at life a little bit different. My name is Wayne Jones, and I have recently been diagnosed with vasculitis. There's 18 variants of vasculitis, and it took over 3 years for me to get said diagnosis, and at the time I was the first one to ever have had the version of vasculitis that they'd found. The readings that were being perceived had never been seen on record, and I was told I should be dead. And there's not really a treatment that they can think of that would save me. I've now survived the treatments. We have become one in a million. I'm the first on record worldwide to have survived the course of treatment in the way that I have. I'm now sharing that experience in the hope to raise awareness of vasculitis. I've campaigned for vasculitis awareness, and I'm in the process of developing an app that I believe will be quite revolutionary. Having been told you should be dead makes you look at life a little bit different. And I once had everything. I had a good job. I had the BMW that I'd always set my sights to buy myself. By the age of 40, I had a house, 4-bedroom house. I had my daughter. I had my wife. I had friends. I had rugby. I could have been happier. But to then get told you should be dead, it takes everything away from you. At one point, I couldn't walk, I couldn't feed myself, I couldn't put my socks on. My daughter had to bring me from a relapse. We're now on the way out of that, and having dealt with, I think, some of life's other tragedies, as in losing my daughter's mother at birth, losing my father, losing my best friend, I want to share my life story and my experiences to motivate and inspire people, I think, to hopefully help other people, I suppose. So using my story to help others.
I'm Lily Jones, and I am Wayne's daughter. Finding out that your dad has an illness is unimaginable. And finding out that he should be dead is scary. You know, I used to go on holidays. I would go to concerts and things. I would go on days out a lot. But now dad can't fly because of his illness, so we can't go on holiday. I mean, that's never really bothered me that much. But I've been through dad having a heart attack, going to school wondering if he's okay. Going to school every Wednesday, and he'd have chemotherapy, and I would be scared that it's going to go wrong. And now I'm sat on a sofa speaking to my dad about it, who survived all these chemotherapies and all of the people telling him that he should be dead, and finding out that he has pretty much done it. He's got through it with how strong he is mentally, and I couldn't be more grateful.
You couldn't have scripted anything better than that, couldn't you?
Okay.
Wow.
One more thing I'm just going to get from you.
My mission is to reduce the 3-year diagnosis of vasculitis. Spread the meaning of being open and talking, not so much from a mental health perspective, but looking at situations from a 360. So it's not just me going through this, it's my daughter, my wife, my friends. What impact did I have on them? And how did they perceive the whole thing? In the hope that we help further friends and family. So my mission, I suppose, is to reduce the 3-year diagnosis time of vasculitis, and my mission is to spread awareness of the importance of talking and having a shoulder for somebody to lean on. But yeah, Lily, first guest on the sofa, how do you feel?
I am excited and happy.
Happy
that you have given me the chance to speak first.
Oh, thank you very much. So, for the people watching, the reason that we're doing this is when I first told you what was happening, I was very keen on documenting it, not just from my side, but from your perspective and Mum's perspective, to hopefully help other families through bad news and things like that. So I suppose what I want you to do is answer some questions that we've never really spoken about, although we've been open all the way through. In the attempt of passing out there, did we do the right thing? Could this help other people? So I suppose, without touching on what we've already been through, you and I, I've always been quite open with you, and maybe some might say too often, in the sense that I don't really keep a lot from you. I've always found it better for you to know, I suppose, the raw truth, as opposed to me sugarcoating it. For example, when Gumpo was poorly, and, you know, et cetera, just so that you didn't have to deal with shock or anything else. So, obviously, it took a long time for me to get diagnosed properly, and I was ill on and off. When I finally had that diagnosis, and I sat you down, how did you feel when I first told you about how serious it was?
I was scared and confused at the time. I was, like, relieved in a way that you've told me, and knowing that we'll get through it together, but I was scared.
Okay. What confused you? Was it the illness and the way that I was? Like, one day I was okay and the next I was really ill, or?
Yeah, and how the illness sounded and how other people hadn't had it before, I was confused as to why it was you getting it.
Yeah, that's a perfect answer. So I suppose for those guys watching, there'll be more episodes, I suppose, on the vasculitis itself, but it is a very rare illness, and as we found out, I was one in a million people to have had it, so we couldn't really look at anything else, could we, for comparison. We couldn't compare it. The information we were getting from the consultants, I suppose, was, we're unsure, you should be dead,
yeah,
but you're not. So that in itself, how did you feel about that, that the professionals couldn't really tell us much?
I think I was annoyed, because I get that not many people have had this before, but I was annoyed that it was my dad who wasn't being told what was wrong with him, and that it was my dad who was suffering with the illness.
Okay. How... So obviously I didn't know the answers either, but I went about finding them myself. Did you see a change in me, the way that I was so, because I must admit I was obsessed with what the illness was and what it was doing to me, more so because of what it was going to end up doing to you? Or did you see a change in me because I didn't know answers, so I was determined to find them myself?
Not really much of a change. I think the illness was driving you a bit crazy, wanting to know what was happening. But I don't think I saw a change in the way you were acting. I'd just never seen the side of you who was so determined to find out what was wrong.
Okay. And I mean, that's still there now, isn't it? You know, we've given them questions and therapies that they've never seen before. Okay, so let's go back to that initial conversation, regardless whether we knew what the illness was or not. Do you feel the way in which I told you was the right way, in the sense that you were only 11 at the time and I sat you down? And can you actually remember how I said it? Do you remember that conversation?
I don't remember how you said it, but I think you would have done it in the right way, because if you hadn't have told me, I would have still been worrying today. What's going on? Why is he asleep some days? Why is he up some days but then goes down? But like I've said before, I'm glad that you've told me, because I could have been just left there worrying about what's going on.
So I don't actually recall the conversation, but I do remember saying to you, this is bad, Lily. The consultants have said they've not seen anything like this. I should be dead and I could die at any minute. And I felt as though I needed to be that open with you, because I didn't want you to wake up one morning and think, where's that gone? Had I have said that to you now, as harsh as it sounds for me, do you think that would be the right way for somebody else to approach it with their children?
I think so, because I think the children need to be prepared for the worst that could happen. I think if they were just told that you, that their dad or mum or family had been given a terminal illness, I think if they'd have just told them that, the children wouldn't be aware of what the illness could do to them.
Okay. Are you okay? So, that said, that I was so open, I think one of the reasons why I did it was for you to not only deal with it should something bad happen, but also to have the opportunity to ask any questions, that if this did happen, what would happen then? Did you feel as though you could openly talk to me about any worries or fears that you had?
I wasn't sure a couple of months ago, let's say. I wasn't sure if I could, because I didn't want to put you under pressure and I didn't want to worry you, because you were already going through enough already. I didn't want to put more pressure on you.
So was there somebody else that you could have them conversations with that you found?
I could have conversation with other family members, aunties, cousins, school, some teachers, I could have conversations with.
Did you open up and tell anybody about it? Because when we had the conversation, it was very much, I'm only going to tell those close enough who I feel comfortable with. You, obviously, I told you, you tell whoever you wanted to, you know, with regards to whenever you needed support or comfort. So there was mum, there was your friends in school, there was your teachers, considering it's a new school as well. You know, you had so much going on.
Yeah.
And this was one of my worries, because it came about when you were just going into year 7, you were just going into a secondary school. Obviously, it's the most prominent time in a girl's life, going through the hormone change and everything that we've been through. You're very much like me in the sense that you keep things to yourself. Was there any close friends or teacher or head of year that you did go to?
There were close friends, school friends that I just made, because primary friends, we all sort of broke off. But the close friends that I did make through the year, I only told quite only a few because there was only a few that I could properly trust.
Yeah.
And I knew there were a few that could help me. There was a teacher that helped me as well that I could go and speak to. But I didn't tell that many people because I didn't want, because high school and then there's some people, there's some different people, I didn't want any rumours being spread.
Yeah, totally understand that. It's, you know, I suppose the same as me. I didn't want everybody to know at first because it's your life. But I suppose you do have to talk about it. So, again, the reason that we're here, if you were to find out a best friend had just been through what we'd been through, what advice would you give them with regards to having somebody or people to lean on as support or comfort? Would you say to do what you did, or would you tell them to do something different?
I would give them advice. I'd say go and speak to people who you really, really trust and you think will help you through it. But I wouldn't tell them what to do and what not to do because they might not feel comfortable with that, or because I'm not a professional. I don't know how to help people, like telling them,
yeah,
go and talk to them. But if they were the type of person like I was, don't tell them at first, get to know them more. And then once you properly trust them, explain to them what's happened, then I would tell them, go and talk to them before you end up just being all bottled up, being all quiet. And then it's like the illness that your parents are going through, it would sort of like break you apart if you didn't go and speak to someone.
And create more illness. Okay, thanks for being so honest about that. So I suppose you hit the nail on the head there when you said we're not professionals. You know, we're never going to try and be professional. All we're trying to do is give, I suppose, just use our example as for what we've been through, in the hope that it may help others, yeah? One thing that I was very guilty of is picking and choosing who I told, depending on how that person had been with me. And I suffered from that. In the sense that you said your school friends broke away. You know how big our family is. You know how big Dad's friends community are. You know, there's multiple rugby teams. There's multiple different groups of friends. We've had the conversation ourselves as to how that pot of hundreds all of a sudden turned to a handful of people. How did it seem to you? Because obviously I've got my own views and we'll have our own episodes about it. How did it seem to you as we're normally popular and people normally come to us with everything and we've got so many friends and family, where's everybody now that we need them? How did that come across to you? And did you see that in your life?
I think when the illness first started, as I was younger, I was confused. I was like sort of worried in a way, like, where's everyone gone? What's happening? But now as I get older, I see that they have broke off and they have left us with only a couple of people. And I didn't like that because it's my dad and I think my dad deserves the best support that he can get. He deserves all them people that he had before to talk to.
It was tough, was it? It was tough. And this will get tough for you. So, you know, we went through May, and that was Vasculitis Awareness Month. And in May, what we tried to do was address some of the reasons why people may have left us. And it could be that they were unsure how to handle it themselves. They were unsure how to be with us. So we addressed it then, didn't we? We said, this is what you should and shouldn't say to people based on our findings. How it would be for, just say for example, one person thinks, wow, I can't quite deal with that. I can't go down to see Lily and Denise and Wayne because I'm struggling. To Wayne, that one person, all the way that you have been and struggled so much, might actually be 20 people because, you know, it impacted quite a few people in that way that they couldn't come to see us. So mentally, that did quite a lot of damage. Did you see me change or struggle as a result of the lack of support in what I thought was lack of support?
I did see you change a bit, and I did see you struggle, because when you changed that little bit, I think you got very annoyed with how many people hadn't come to see us or hadn't even given you a phone call of just asking how you are. So I did see a slight change there, but I knew it was hurting you, how all the lack of support that you had from it, because this is like the worst time of your life, and the friends that might have said that they'd be there for you haven't been there, or your closest friends or family have just disappeared.
So I suppose in there, again, the context of the podcast, what would you say to friends and family of, I'm not going to say a victim, of a patient or of a sufferer, if they were just finding out that somebody is severely ill, what advice would you give them?
I'd tell them to stay as close to that person as possible, because if they got older and realised how maybe selfish they could have been not going to see them or just not being there for them, I think they'd regret it a lot, because how strong their friend or family member was just dealing with it by themselves or with that very few people there, I think they would really regret not being there for them.
Yeah, that was one of my worries, was that, you know, he kept giving people the chance so they didn't have to deal with that guilt. But I suppose one piece of information that I'd give is, regardless how much you're struggling to deal with said information, you need to be honest to that person, in the sense that, I'm sorry, I'm struggling to comprehend what you've told me. But I'm going to make you aware of that, and I will do my best to continue, you know, to be in your life. Because believe it or not, I didn't want to go over the same conversation with 20, 30 people at the time. I would rather have a relationship with my friends or family without the illness being there. So carry on having jokes about rugby or dealing with normal life, or me dealing with your problems like I always did. Regardless of the illness being there or not, you know, you should still be there for that person. So that was one of the huge things that we wanted to get out there, wasn't it? Because the mental damage that did to me and then rubbed off on yourself and mum was inexcusable from my aspect. It was one of the biggest problems with this illness, is what it did mentally. So that also changed my behaviour, didn't it? And it made me distance myself from an awful lot of people. But there was people that we weren't as close to prior diagnosis that all of a sudden became a rock within our life. Yeah? Have you got a message for them people just now as to where we are today? Have you got a message you want to say to them?
Thank you, just for being there for my dad, for my mum, and for me. that has helped an awful lot with the amount of, because of the amount of people that haven't been there. And if you weren't as close with the person who has the illness, if you weren't as close with Dad before, and you've brought yourself back into our lives, helping us do the illness, I think that is a big inspiration, and it's incredible. It's
I totally agree, totally. And it shocked us, didn't it? It really did. So I think what I would say here is we've had quite a number of people call and say, I can't offer you much. And I'm sorry, I can't do more. But that one phone call is more, isn't it? That one phone call could mean the world. It could mean absolutely anything. All I ever wanted, I think, through the time of me suffering, and still suffering to this day, is when people say, if there's anything I can do, let me know. Now, you know what I think of that statement. I wouldn't ever like to hear it of anybody again, because if they're genuine, I'm not saying genuine as such, but somebody in my position is never going to ask for that help, are they? If there's anything I can do, let me know. All that's doing is putting the ball back in my court so that that person can go away and say, oh, I've helped, I've been in touch. All I ever wanted somebody to do was come and take you to McDonald's or take you away for an hour. Do you want me to have Lily for the day, or we're going here, we're going there? Come and whip Mum off for a coffee. You know, give you two a break from me. Yeah. It wasn't as much as helping me or taking me places or, I don't know, getting me a Lego car like somebody did, which was absolutely fantastic, by the way. I'd put that out to anybody who's struggling, where they're stuck at home and like mentally I couldn't focus on anything, physically I couldn't do anything. Always look for different ways to fill your time. So I used to go to the gym 5 days a week, play rugby 3 times a week, work, walk the dog, and all of a sudden you can't do any of that and you're stuck within your house. So you become a prisoner in your own home, so you have to mentally and physically put your time to other things. And adult Lego is a brilliant way out, isn't it? But we've done lots of other things. So if we go back to when the first chemotherapy treatment didn't work, and I was honest and told you that it didn't work, and we said that because the vasculitis was so rare, they didn't know where we were going next or what treatment was to follow. At that time, I started to decline in, I suppose, with my symptoms, didn't I? You know, I started to slow down. You've seen me physically suffering with sickness. And how did you feel then, being told that the chemotherapy didn't work and the surgeons don't know where to go next?
I felt annoyed. Probably very annoyed. I think surgeons being surgeons, I feel like I expect them to know what's going on, and I expect the chemotherapy to work because it's an illness that is serious, and I was really hoping that chemotherapy would take it away, and I think I got too hopeful that I got very annoyed when I found out that the chemotherapy didn't work.
Just on that then, when you were hopeful, was that because of how I was? In the sense that I was constantly telling you, I'll beat this, we will be okay? Or was that because you've always thought terminal illness plus chemotherapy equals better life? Or
yeah, I thought that because you had the illness and then you would have chemotherapy, I thought, right, he's going to get better. He's going to get better straight after chemotherapy.
Okay.
Because that's...
So that's your preconception of
yeah
what you thought chemotherapy does yeah to terminal illness. Okay, that's interesting. That's, I suppose for other people. I think for me as well, I always had a positive outlook. I always said to you, I'm going to do it. Because mentally, I think that you can do whatever you want to do when you turn your head to it, when you turn your mind to it. And it was never a doubt in my mind that this illness would beat me. What I didn't expect was the treatment to beat me. So can I take you to that day when I started a second course of treatment, which had never been trialled before? And it was just you and I in the house. You know where I'm going, don't you? And I was cooking your dinner.
Yeah.
Can you just tell me what you remember from that day, please?
I remember taking dinner out of the oven. And then just as you were going to put it back in the oven, you started shaking really, really badly. And your head was shaking, and you started going all wobbly and you were about to fall over. You threw the tray of food onto the side. Then, because the oven was open, because you were going to put the food in, your hand fell in the oven. Then you fell back, your head hit the cupboard, and then you fell down onto the floor. I didn't know what was going on. You were shaking. I was screaming. I was crying. I was petrified. I didn't know what to do. Then you started making quite a snoring sound. And I thought, has he fallen asleep while he's shaking? I ran and got my phone. I was like, should I call an ambulance? Should I call mum? What do I do? Then I waited. I held your head up, and I was like, I was holding your hand. I was telling you it was going to be okay. I was trying to wake you up. Went on for about 5 minutes. Then it stopped, and you laid still for a minute. I checked your pulse to see if you were still like alive, see if you were still breathing. You were. Then you woke up. I started speaking to you. You were confused as if you'd just woken up from something. Like you were looking about. Then you got on your knees, started opening all the drawers. I showed you your burn as you were in the kitchen. Then I took you into the living room. I ran into the freezer, got you a bag of frozen peas. I went back into the living room and I told you, hold these on your hand, because you didn't know what was going on. So I said, just keep these on your hand, please. And you did. And then I got you a bandage because I thought, how if I conceal the burn, maybe it won't get bad. So I did. And then you started getting up, walking about. I think I ran upstairs to get you something and I came back down. You were in the conservatory and then you sat me down and you were asking me what's just happened and I explained it to you.
Yeah, that was... I think that there, for me, was one of the hardest times that we've been through, in the sense that no daughter of anybody, regardless your age, should have to go through what you went through that time. And you know what, you couldn't have done any better than what you did. And we've spoken about this, and I thought you were an absolute warrior and a hero. Obviously, it wasn't the first time something like that happened to me. If you recall, we did try and keep one episode from you that happened like that, when I collapsed in the shower and split my eye open. And from that point, did you behave or act any differently with regards to the questions I asked you earlier, talking to people and keeping stuff to yourself?
I definitely opened up more, and I definitely spoke to you more, because that moment where you fell down, I was petrified that I was going to lose my dad.
Did it all of a sudden become real at that point? Yeah. Don't worry about getting upset. You should have had to go through that. And I honestly hope that no other child has to go through that. I think from there then, sorry about this a minute. From that day, our lives have changed quite a lot, in the sense that we're used to having holidays abroad every year. With me having this terminal illness, with me having the chemotherapy, the treatment that I'm on, and the unknown, I am not allowed to fly. I cannot get insurance. And the consultants have said they advise me against flying. Bearing in mind that you were never spoiled leading up to this, I always just tried to provide you what I never had as a child, one of which was some holiday. With me telling you this year that we can't go, how did you feel?
I was gutted that we couldn't go on holiday. Because I would enjoy holidays are something I really do look forward to. But if I'm being honest, I really would rather stay home with you than go on holiday with anyone else.
Thank you. So, terminal illness has changed your dad in ways that I never thought would ever happen, in the sense that I've always been proud to provide for you. I've always tried to be somebody that you could look up to, being a hard worker. I've always tried to do the right thing. To me, a terminal illness has taken all that away from me. It stopped me from helping you with your homework. It stopped me from showing you, get up, go to work, giving you that ethic. It stopped me from providing you the holidays or days out. Do you feel that I am less of a person now, as I do? Or do you feel differently?
I feel differently, because up till now, and you carry on doing it, you just give me the world, and I think because you want to be the best person, best dad to me, that you can, I think it's, I don't know how to explain it, you always want to give me everything, you want to be the best person, but I think you need to learn that it's okay not to be sometimes. And I think this illness has brought us closer than ever, and you haven't changed. You're still that person who does help me with my homework, and you're still the person who gives me everything that you possibly could.
Just in ways that I didn't before. So again, I think that's that mental side I've told you about, wasn't it? We've never spoken about this. Like I said to you, because I am such a proud dad, I think what you're trying to say is that... Okay, let me ask you this question then. Before the terminal illness, how did you perceive me? As in, I've spoken to you about my dad, and my dad used to be this hero, this world, this icon. That's how I tried to come across to you. How did you look at me before the terminal illness?
Before the illness, I still saw you as a dad that has been through enough already. Obviously, losing mum and losing all those people. I think you still giving me everything that you could. You were still the best dad that I could ask for. And now, I think you're just even more of a hero than you were.
And you say, more of a hero, is that because our relationship or because of the work that we're trying to do? Or, I don't know.
All of it, really. And it's your mindset going through this, the terminal illness that you've got. Your mindset going through it is incredible. I've never seen someone like it before. I mean, you see all the famous people that try and be it, that are inspirational, but you, knowing someone and being close to someone that has a mindset like you have is amazing. It's the fact that you still, with this illness, push yourself to be the best person is amazing, because even when you're really ill and even when you're suffering a lot, you still manage to wake up and be that person that you always have been.
Sometimes. As we know this, like today I've, 3 days in bed?
Yeah.
To me, that means the world, what you've just said. It really does. It's to know that I'm an inspiration to you, who's known me my whole life, is the most inspiring thing for me, I suppose, I'm trying to say. So, from that point, we struggled. We then trialled a different chemotherapy and we were unsure how it was going to go. And it got a lot worse. Until it got a little bit better. Can you remember the day that you had that phone call in school?
Yeah.
What did I say on that phone call?
We've done it. And you explained to me how you've been to the hospital and you found out you're 50% clear from the illness.
Now, I probably shouldn't have phoned you at school. One, because you're not meant to have a phone, but I think for me, having seen everything, you knew I was in hospital that day. Leading up to it, you'd been every other hospital appointment texting me, how to get on, how to get on, how to get on. I could not wait to tell you because of all the bad stuff that we'd been through. But hearing you on the phone, bursting into tears and... Was that the right thing to do for me to phone you like that?
Yeah.
Because I then thought after, hang on, this is dinner time. She's burst into tears. Maybe there's people there that didn't know what was going on. That I'm looking at her thinking, oh God, what's wrong with Lily? Was it the right thing for me to do?
Yeah, because I didn't care what people thought. Because I just found out that my dad is 50% clear from an illness that I've been messaging him about every day, and that every hospital appointment he has been worried that something's going to happen, something's going to go wrong. But then to have that phone call that was definitely one of the happiest days of my life.
Yeah, mine too. I still remember your little face when you come bursting through the door at 3 o'clock. So we've since had further news mirroring that, in that although I was the first person, well, there was five people before me that had tried the treatment on record. Unfortunately, I'm the first one to get to the end of that treatment. And I came home to you about 3 weeks ago, telling you that Mr. Jones had said to me, "This is quite remarkable. I think you're meeting the illness. I think you're not in the clear as such. You're never going to get rid of said illness." But he was talking about reconstructive surgery for somebody being in remission. Now, given that 12 months ago, the same surgeon was telling me, "You will not live past Christmas. Your throat is collapsing. Your cartilage in your nose has collapsed. Your face has collapsed." This consultant is now telling your dad, "I think you've turned a corner." That was the first day I come home to you and said, "We might be in the clear." How did you feel then? Because I remember I was very nervous of telling you.
I think I can't put it into words, but I don't think. But it was definitely a big relief to hear that you've, there's not that much of a chance of you passing away or the illness coming back and being as bad as it started off being. But I was very, very happy that day.
Still cautious, though?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think one thing I would certainly tell, a message for me to tell people, is with vasculitis itself, the fight is on the inside, isn't it? You've seen all along. If you were to ask me one day, "How are you feeling, Dad?" and I were to tell you, like, if you've run over by a train, what you're looking at isn't what I'm telling you. Do you agree with that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? So for me to then say, "I think I've beaten it," am I right in thinking that what you're trying to say is, it's not over?
I know that it's not over and that it won't be over. But I just remember coming back home from school in year six, I'd say, and then I'd see my dad on the sofa asleep, and I'd be confused, but then to hear 2 years later that it's going, that he's clear from, well, he's not completely clear.
Oh, yeah.
He's controlling it. That is a big relief, and it's a feeling that I won't forget, because knowing that the person I love the most in my life isn't gonna pass away or isn't gonna live with an illness for the rest of his life that's gonna take over him, knowing that that's not gonna happen was indescribable. I can't put it into words.
It's quite magic, wasn't it, when I was able to tell you that? And I think the fact that we've been through so much, just you and I, having that little minute together. I think that said, I've always worried since having that information that the side effects of the treatment was going to get me. And I've told you this, yeah? So it's since given me diabetes, It's going to mean you're off a thee where you've seen me. We could be out, couldn't we? Just walking along in public and all of a sudden my legs give way and I collapse. The heart attack, the strokes that you've seen. I was worried that it was always, or could still be one of them that gets me. But I think mentally I've always fought beyond that. We are now 3 weeks today. 3 weeks today, post my last treatment. So I've completed the second chemotherapy. Been the first person to get to where we are on record. They're now following Daddy's symptoms and following Dad's life. However, I've asked them to give us some time to myself to healthily eat fruit and vegetables, get some sleep, you know, because the illness and, well, the terminal illness and the treatment, as you know, took away my immune system. So it stopped my body defending against any illness. And it was due to that that I think I suffered so badly. So without an immune system, I had the shingles, which was beyond fathomable. I think it was the worst time during our 3 years, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So somebody at risk as I was to then have the shingles on top of that, it led to 4 weeks of not doing anything. I was stuck on the sofa, was I? I was constantly passing out, constantly being sick. Mentally, it nearly beat me at that point, didn't it? I think I was close to giving up. Part of that, plus being 3 weeks on from where we are, how would you say our future's looking now? As opposed to, but there's still so many what ifs.
Yeah.
There's still so many if this could happen overnight. You know, because that risk will never, ever go away. How would you look at it now?
I think our future, in my eyes, is definitely going to be better than I thought it would be a couple of months ago.
So what did you think a couple of months ago?
A couple of months ago, I saw my future with no dad. I thought my dad would be gone.
Okay, so interesting for me. Did it ever come to you that this is feeding him?
No.
No?
No. It was before you had that heart attack and when you had shingles, I was petrified that something would happen, that if you, when you went through chemotherapy, petrified that it was gonna do something that would make you suffer really badly. But knowing how mentally strong you are, and since that heart attack's happened, I don't think I've ever been worried about you giving up.
Okay. Could you tell me a bit more about that?
Always stay near the parent that has it. Always stay close to them. Don't be quiet. Don't be all bottled up with how you're feeling. If anything, I think it would be better to talk to the person who has the illness. Okay. I know I didn't do that, but now I look at it differently, thinking that I think talk to the person who has the illness so that they can tell you that it's okay, that what you're going through. It's okay to talk and it's okay to be upset.
And absolutely.
The person with the illness can show their side of things.
Do you want to go into more detail about that bit?
Expect the life you had before you found out that your parent had the illness. Expect that to be different to the life that you will build up from here. It sounds a bit brutal when I'm saying this, but expect the worst, because if you expect so little of what you think the illness is about, then you've got another thing coming, because something can happen at any time. The parent could collapse, and if the parent collapses, you will feel as if they are going to die, because I think that's just how children would feel. That's how I felt. And because I didn't know what to expect, because I didn't have anyone to tell me before what to expect, I was confused. I didn't know what was going to happen. That's why I was so confused when you collapsed, because I didn't know what was going on. It's not that you haven't told me anything, because you've told me everything. It's just I was confused because I didn't know what was happening at the time. So I think the child that I'm giving advice to is, well, should be prepared, or should be ready for something that could happen. Even if it doesn't happen, it's always good to know that anything can happen at any point.
So, yeah, thank you for that. I think terminal illness is not a joke. And I think if the parent has got to the stage where they need to share that information with the child, it's time that reality, you know, comes on board. So I think for me now, the way I'd say coming out of it, it's always going to be there. We're never going to get rid of it. However, fingers crossed, treatment has been put to the back burner now, so the risk of side effects from future treatment should start to pan away. If I were to say to you, what has terminal illness done to your life? What would your answer be?
It's made me stronger. It's made me look at the world differently. It has changed me to not expect things to be given to me. It's told me not to take things for granted. It's told me to stay close to the people that you love, because you never know, one day they could just go.
Because that was one of the questions that was put to me on the Vasculitis Foundation. And it wasn't terminal illness, it was, what has vasculitis done for you? And my answer was, it's given me a better life. Not in the sense of a physical, in the sense of, I always thought that I appreciated everything I had prior. And I always thought that we made the most of everything.
Yeah, and I know you've tried to prepare me for the world, and I think your illness, that has helped. It helped you prepare me, because I never know what could happen, and finding out that you had an illness was a big shock. And I think now we're going through this and we've almost got through it. I think that's definitely made me stronger and more knowledgeable on how the world can be and what can happen.
I totally agree. Do you have maybe one final message for anybody else that's going to go through what we've been through?
Just keep close to the person who is going, who is suffering. Stay close to them because you may regret.
Yeah. Okay, thank you very much. I'm going to leave it there, I think, because I need to give my daughter a hug. So, Lily, thank you. And I just hope that nobody else has to go through what you've been through. Okay? You all right? Come here, sweetheart.
Big.
I'll be about you.